So we're talking about breaking the sound barriers. What are the sound barriers? Well, sound barriers are the natural steps that all of us go through to move from being afraid to share our faith, which I was. You know, I said it was wrong and all that stuff, but I was just afraid, bottom line. We move from that to being a Christ-centered laborer, meaning we become somebody who can cultivate, sow, and reap and water and reap in calling people to put their trust in Jesus Christ, a Christ-centered laborer. At one time or another, all of us have wanted to share the gospel, but the challenge is to know how to begin the conversation. That's oftentimes the hardest part. How do you bring it up? Man, it's like there's a stone wall over your mouth and you just can't get anything out that would start a conversation about Christ. How do you get over that barrier? Then after you begin to visit, the challenge becomes how to bring up spiritual issues without being manipulative or appearing to have a hidden agenda. Like, how do you initiate a conversation but not be like, oh, well, has anyone ever told you about Jesus? You know, in some kind of way where the person's like, well, that was odd, you know. That was kind of strange. You know, you don't want to do that. And that's oftentimes our greatest fear, that people will think we're some kind of a Jesus robot that's like, let me tell you about Jesus. You know, we don't want to be that, and so we end up saying nothing. And if you can't envision how you would begin a conversation and then move through it to the gospel, then you probably won't do it because you'll be afraid that it won't come out right, and so you just won't do anything. Then even if we accomplish these things of beginning a conversation and actually transitioning to spiritual things, then we're confused as to how to explain the gospel clearly and then how to ask people to respond to the gospel. When we talked about that earlier today, that sometimes we think we're sharing the gospel when we're wearing a Christian t-shirt or we play Christian music loud in the dorm and we think, well, see, I'm doing evangelism. Well, I don't think that's true. I mean, might be evangelistic, but you got to know how to share the gospel, meaning you got to know what the gospel is, when you've communicated it, and then be able to ask, who do you say that Jesus is? And would there be anything that would prevent you from putting your trust in Jesus right now? That's the critical point of decision that you want to be able to and confident in bringing some person to that point and then asking them to make a decision, because that's the most important decision they can make. So how do you do that? Well, you got to break the sound barriers. First barrier is having a conversation with a stranger. That's really hard to do. Second is having a spiritual conversation, because talking about spiritual things is not just like talking about the weather. So that becomes a barrier. How do you, maybe you can have a conversation with a stranger about the weather, and so that's not a barrier for you. But the second one, oh man, a spiritual conversation, gee, I don't know if I can do that. Well, then you need to work on the second sound barrier. Third, sharing the gospel. Maybe you talk to people all the time about life and death and heaven and hell and, you know, sin in general or you know, what's going to happen when you die, stuff like that. But you never know how to then move to the gospel. That's a third barrier. And last, asking a person to respond to the gospel. Some of you may be quite confident talking about the gospel, but you talk about Christ and his life and his death and resurrection, but you get to the point and you think, well, now what? Well, ask that person to make a decision. And if you're not sure how to do that, then that becomes a barrier. And that's something that I think is the indispensable final part of being an effective evangelist and sharing the gospel, asking people to respond. And if you don't know how to do it, you probably won't, because you're not sure. You might blow it. You might think, gee, I don't want to ask this person to respond, because if I don't do it right, they won't do it right, and somehow they won't be a Christian. Or, you know, I mean, we feel a certain amount of pressure because we realize this is an important conversation. So by identifying these natural steps and becoming an effective evangelist, we can help diagnose the needed steps of training in ourselves and those we're discipling. Some of you are leading others. And so you may have no problem with, you know, one through three of these barriers, but somebody that's in your Bible study or that you're leading, and having a conversation with a stranger is a nightmare. Well, then you can focus on that first barrier, and you personally can focus on the fourth one. But that's the thing. Breaking it down allows you to focus on these things to actually break through some of these barriers. Some effective tools for breaking these sound barriers are the Quest Survey, which, raise your hand if you know what the Quest Survey is. Okay, good, a few of you, and the staff know what the Quest Survey is. Quest Survey is awesome for initiating conversations about spiritual things. I'm going to give you an alternative, and that's what this next part is, learning the skill of guided conversations. We're going to talk about that tonight. The quest survey is great, but in my experience, it lasts a long time because there's five really good questions, and if you only have an hour between classes maybe to talk to someone about Christ, oftentimes for me that's too long. And so, and it's a little bit formal in the sense that it's like this survey thing. What I'm going to try to teach you tonight is how to initiate a conversation about a specific topic that maybe doesn't last as long, but still gives you an opportunity to share the gospel, and it's informal, so you could use it any time. You could be talking about a whole bunch of different kinds of things and then learn how to move from that into sharing the gospel very naturally. That's the skill of guided conversation. Often, the main barrier is fear and inexperience. And that's exactly how I was. You know, perfect love casts out fear. So remind yourself of the love of God for you in Christ. The main reason why I began to share my faith was because Jesus commanded me to do it. And because I was convinced that Jesus loves me, he would never tell me to do anything that was bad for me, I drank some Pepto-Bismol and I said, okay, let's try this, you know. And I was terrified. But I did it because I trusted the one who was telling me to do it. And Jesus calls all of us to have a part in calling the world to worship God. And the way that we worship God is through Christ. So that means we share the gospel. That's what it means to make disciples of all nations, all groups of people. That means, you know, the people of Black Hills, the people of CU Boulder, where I am, the people, you know, in the community, the people in government, the people in law, in medicine. Those are all nations. They're groups of people. And somebody's got to go and make disciples out of them, and so he calls all of us to have a role. Now, we might have some different roles over the course of our life, but I think Jesus calls all of us to be able to explain the gospel to someone and ask them to make a decision, but these are the natural barriers that prevent us. But the perfect love of Christ for us, I think, is the thing that you probably need to focus on to deal with some of your fears. Would Jesus really tell you to do something that was bad for you? Or maybe this fearful thing that I certainly was afraid of is the very means that Jesus will use to pull you close to him and to give you a sense of partnership with him, that he's really for you and he's really with you and he's going to use you to change others' lives the same way your life has been changed by him. But then the other barrier is inexperience. And you know, the way to get experience is by doing it. Even if you botch it up, you can learn from that. And so that's why, you know, I put here, inexperience is just waiting to be left behind. The way you get experience is just by trying it. Even if it goes badly, you'll learn from it and you'll get better. Especially if it's something that Jesus wants you to do. And especially if he's given you the Holy Spirit to equip you and to help you. I mean, God is not intimidated by your weaknesses. He asks you to help be a part of reaching the world for Christ. And your weaknesses are no threat to him, because you have the Holy Spirit living inside of you. And Jesus' presence with you by the power of the Holy Spirit. So you may think, well, I can't share my faith because, you know, what do I know? And I'm not very articulate. Yeah, Moses tried that one. You know, Moses was like, yeah, I can't lead the people. I don't talk so good. And God says, I make mouths. I mean, what do you think? You think your lack of articulateness can stop me from using you? No, it's the same for all of us. Let's see here. Commit yourself to a schedule of breaking these sound barriers. And tonight is the first date on the schedule. For example, week one, make it your goal to simply have a conversation with a stranger on any topic. That's what we're going to do tonight. You don't have to share the gospel tonight. You don't have to share the gospel tonight. Initiate a conversation with a stranger. But I'm going to challenge you to break two sound barriers tonight. Don't bring up, you know, for example, week one, make it your goal to simply have a conversation with a stranger on any topic. For some of you who are totally terrified, don't talk about spiritual things. Just talk about anything. The weather, your major, you know, the war, who knows. Whatever you want, because that's the best you can do. Then that's okay. But the idea of having a conversation with a stranger is just like death to you. So trust God tonight to break this first sound barrier. Don't bring up spiritual things. Don't bring up the gospel. Just talk, and more importantly, listen. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a second. This beginning goal is particularly important in training a fearful disciple. And that's why I'm dwelling on this, because you know some of you have probably never done this before and you're terrified. This first step becomes easier when you communicate confidence that you're only going to go so far. So for me to say, look, don't share the gospel, then you don't have to worry about that whole big thing. You know, okay, I'll just tonight have a conversation with a stranger. Great. That's your first step towards being an evangelist. And you can do it. You really can. And you don't have to be afraid. But by breaking it into steps, that allows you to be able to focus on that. This helps focus us on overcoming initial fears and a lack of skills, because you don't have to worry about all the skills of the gospel. You just have a conversation. A step-by-step approach to learning evangelism is the most effective way to develop the art and science of sharing the gospel. And it's both, but I won't go into that right now. On the second week, use a quest survey, or tonight we're going to try our hand at the guided conversation, to initiate a conversation regarding spiritual things. Don't feel the need to share the gospel. Just have a conversation regarding spiritual things. And that's what I want to challenge you guys to do tonight. For some of you, the first sound barrier is all you can do. But for some others of you, have a conversation about spiritual things. And I'm going to show you exactly how I think you can do that. I'm going to give you some real practical examples. Some of you are going to end up sharing the gospel anyway. Just because once you start talking about spiritual things, somebody will be like, well, what do you believe? Or they may say, well, you're a Christian? Well, what is that about? Or yeah, I was a Christian once, but I didn't really understand what it meant. And it's a perfect opportunity to share the gospel. So some of you probably will end up sharing the gospel tonight, even though you think you can't. Because that's kind of how God works. He surprises us oftentimes with opportunities that we couldn't imagine when we simply step out on faith to do anything. And lo and behold, you know, you may find yourself, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody came to Christ tonight, even though our goal is only to just initiate maybe conversation with a stranger. Because that's the kind of God we serve. You know, Jesus says, well, how much food do we have? Well, we have a couple loaves and a couple fishes. Mm-hmm. Oh, really? You know, you may think, well, I don't have anything to offer. I'm just going to go through the motions tonight and try to survive. And you may lead somebody to Christ. Not because of you, but because of who God is. And that's the cool thing, is that if you do it and you have nothing to offer, then when it happens, then we'll say, well, all the glory goes to God. Because that's how it ought to be. That's why he uses humble people. That's why he uses people who don't have all the skills and all the shots and everything. Because then he gets the glory. And so I expect God will do some neat things tonight. Let's see here. Then on the third week, make it your goal to have a conversation about spiritual things and look for an opportunity to bring up the gospel specifically and then explain it clearly using the Knowing God Personally booklet, or in your case, the Bridge. Crusade uses the Four Laws or Knowing God Personally booklet, the Bridge, or the other one, the Ba. There you go. But that those tools are great for being able to share the gospel without having a seminary degree. You know, that's the whole point, is to be able to share the essence of the gospel in a systematic way. It should help you break the third and fourth sound barrier, because the booklet leads to a point of decision. And that's the thing. If you just read through the booklet, you wouldn't just explain the gospel, but you'd actually be able to ask them to respond. On the fourth week, solidify your skill by breaking all four sound barriers again this week. This kind of training is an effective way for you to grow as a Christ-centered laborer. Now think about it. Imagine in 4 weeks if you could go from being somebody who's terrified of sharing the gospel to someone who could lead somebody to Christ at any time because you're equipped and confident in sharing the gospel. That'd be pretty cool. What would be even cooler is if 4 weeks from now somebody called Jesus Lord because of you. How cool would that be? How cool would it be if in 10 years there was 20 or 30 or 40 people who thank God every day for you because you learned how to share the gospel and you radically changed lives? How cool would it be in 40 years if somebody's kids walk up to you and say, you led my mom or you led my dad to Christ, and now their life is forever different. They're a better husband and a better parent because you shared the gospel with them. not to mention in heaven, somebody from the other side of the world comes up to you and says, you led someone to Christ who came to India and told my tribe about who Jesus is. How cool would that be? That's what God does with people who just trust Him to do what He says. And He says, make disciples of all nations. You may never go to India, but somebody that you influence might, if you're willing to step out in faith and begin, maybe tonight, just having a conversation. So, I want to try to explain why it's so hard to share the gospel. I call this my keys to random evangelism. See, random's in quotes because nothing's random from God's perspective, right? You may have some unexpected, unplanned conversation with somebody tonight, but it's not random from God's perspective. It's part of God's plan to use you to change somebody's life. The first thing about quote-unquote random evangelism is that if you're weird, they're weird. You know what I mean? Okay, here's what I mean. Some of you know what I mean, and here's what it is that, and so you're pretty confident, Isaac, so I can imagine that this, you know, might not be an issue for you, but I mean, what it is because I'm sort of instinctively afraid of sharing the gospel, that when I go to try to initiate a conversation and break that first sound barrier and share the gospel, imagine, you know, if somebody's sitting there reading the newspaper on campus, and I think, well, I want to initiate a conversation with them about the gospel. I walk near them, and I kind of stop, and then I kind of stand here for no apparent reason because I'm afraid. I call this sort of the circle of weirdness. Because nobody walks near you and then stops, you know. It's like, you know, if you're going to ask directions or, you know, you walk up and say, hey, bro, how do I get to the music building, you know, or how do I get to the math building? There's not this hesitancy. But, see, the hesitancy comes from, I feel weird about sharing my faith. I feel weird about having a conversation with a stranger. And so I subconsciously and non-verbally infect the other person with my weirdness. Right? And the other way I do it, you know, is I walk up and I'm like, hey, I was wondering if I could talk to you about something. That's just weird. One, because I don't look in the eye. I feel weird. I'm not confident in what I'm saying. And I haven't really approached you. I'm sort of hovering in this sphere of weirdness. And what do you think? You think, man, this is weird. You know? What is this guy up to? You know, what am I doing? I recognize that about myself, that oftentimes what I perceive in terms of people being uncomfortable when I'm talking to them about Christ, I haven't gotten to the gospel. I'm barely starting a conversation. I start thinking, well, why do they seem weird? Well, it's because I'm weird. It's because I'm kind of ashamed of what I'm doing. And it's because I subconsciously think there's something wrong with sharing my faith. Well, here's one way to overcome the weirdness. Second, you know, Mr. Miyagi in The Karate Kid, I said, look high, always look high. All right? Well, that's true. See, normal human interaction involves eye contact. That's why we have eyes, right? Because we like to see who we're talking to, right? So if I walk up to Isaac and he's sitting on the ground, you know, reading newspaper, and I go, hey, bro, you got a second? And I look him in the eye and I say, hey, my name's Ryan. And it's just, you know, totally normal. I'm not weird. I feel okay about this conversation. I'm not doing anything shameful. So I look him in the eye. If I feel shameful, I'm looking all around and wondering how I look and wondering how this looks. That makes Isaac weird because I'm weird. So one way to overcome weirdness is just to look people in the eye. Next way is to introduce yourself and remember their name. I'm embarrassed to say that there's been countless times where I've initiated a conversation with someone, talking about spiritual things, and I'm hip deep in the gospel. You know, I'm talking about sin and all this other stuff, and I realize I have no idea what this person's name is. And they don't know what my name is. I call that a drive-by evangelism. You know, it's not a conversation. It's a presentation. And that's one of the reasons why we're afraid to share our faith, because we know we would hate that. And we think that's what evangelism is. It's, let me come and broadside you with this gospel gun, and then I'm going to leave. But there's not going to be normal human interaction that involves, hey, my name is Ryan. What's your name? Tell me about yourself. Where are you from? What's your major? Yeah, I'm from Southern California originally. I went to Arizona State, and now I work for this weird Christian organization. No, just kidding. But a conversation is a two-way street and involves telling something about yourself and the other person. And the first step to that is, your names. If you don't do that, it's a sign that you're not engaging in a conversation. You're engaging in something that feels a lot like a sales job or some kind of a manipulation, because you're communicating by not asking someone's name and telling your name that you really don't care to know this person. You're just trying to shoot them with this gun of whatever it is, or give them a shot that's going to inoculate them from something, but it's not a normal human thing. And this generation, I believe, is very committed to or very interested in relationship and intimacy. And so when we come up and don't interact that way, we play right into the stereotypes of Christians being just interested in, let me paint you with my Jesus brush and move on. And that's not what Jesus did, number one. And then fourth, the key to not being weird is to listen. Now, Fight Club is an R-rated movie, and it's a brutal movie. There's cursing, swearing, and some nudity and brutality. But I think it's one of the most important movies about men and about modern manhood that has ever been made, for a number of reasons. And so I say, not everybody needs to watch this movie. If you have a sensitive conscience, you probably don't need to watch it because it's very disturbing. But what's going on in men's lives these days is very disturbing. And in some sense, that's why the movie reflects that. But there's an illustration in this movie that just stopped me short in understanding what the needs of people in modern life are. And this movie is really weird. It's about this guy who is so disconnected from himself and so disconnected from others. He's almost not human in terms of the way his life goes. He works in this horrible job where he tries to estimate. He works for an auto company, and they go to accident scenes and where people have been horribly maimed and killed. And he tries to help figure out whether it would be cheaper to just pay legal claims from people who've been maimed and killed by the cars that the company makes, or whether it would be better to do a recall. And you see, what they're trying to figure out is whether they should just let people die and be burned and maimed because it would be cheaper than recalling the car and the safety defect in it, which is horrible. It's immoral. It's inhuman. That's his job. And his boss doesn't talk to him like a normal human being. He doesn't have any friends. He doesn't have any girlfriends. All he does is sit in his apartment and buy furniture for his apartment. Well, when you live in an inhuman way, it's hard to act like a human, and so he can't sleep. He has terrible insomnia. So he goes to the emergency room to get help for his insomnia because he's just dying. He just can't barely even move. And he goes to the emergency room, and the guy says, "Look, I can't give you any drugs," because he wants drugs to sleep. And he says, "You need natural sleep. The drugs aren't going to help you." And he says, "Oh, but I'm in pain." And the guy says, "You want to see pain? Go to First Methodist on Sunday night." Well, he goes, and he steps into a support group for men and anyone who's been affected by testicular cancer. And the first person that's there, the talking there, is this man who says, he's kind of emotional. He says, my wife had a baby yesterday." And you assume, he's talking about his own wife and his own baby. He says, "I'm really happy for her. She always wanted kids, and so I hope they're happy. I mean, she divorced me, and she's been remarried now a couple of years, and I'm happy that she had a baby." And he realized that this guy had this marriage that ended because he had testicular cancer and could no longer father children, so his wife left him for another man so she could have kids. And he just breaks down and starts to cry. And Jack, the main character, he's just like, "Oh my gosh, what is this?" Well, he gets addicted to these groups. And you're like, "This is weird." But he gets addicted to going to these groups. He goes to all these different cancer and other terminal disease groups every night of the week. And now he's sleeping like a baby. He finally feels like he's a little bit normal. Until there's this girl who starts coming to these groups who's just like him. He can tell that there's nothing wrong with her. She's a tourist, as he describes it. Well, finally one night he corners her, And he's mad at her because she ruins the illusion that he's really part of the group, because there's nothing wrong with him. And so he grabs her and he says, "Why do you come here? Why do you do this?" And she says, "Why do you do it?" And he says, "Because when people think that you're dying, they really listen. Instead of," and she finishes his thought, showing that she thinks exactly the same thing. She says, "Instead of just waiting for their turn to speak." When I heard that, I thought, what would it be like to live in a world where you believe that nobody cared what you had to say? Nobody cared what was coming out of your mouth. They're just waiting for their turn to say their part. That's hell. That is not the way God has intended human beings to live. And yet, I think that whole interaction in that movie describes the way many, many young people in particular feel. People don't listen. People don't even talk anymore with the TV and the video and the internet and all the other things. I mean, thankfully, girls still talk because they're biologically predisposed to do so. But does anybody really listen? Guys don't talk or listen very often. And so, if you're willing to listen, if you're willing to listen to your classmates and people on campus, you may be giving them a gift that they have not received in months or years or possibly never. You may be giving them the gift of listening to what they think and who they are. So, when you think about having a conversation with a stranger about Christ, it has to be a conversation, which means you've got to listen. Listen carefully. Let them talk freely and completely, which is really hard because you're thinking, well, I'm here to share the gospel. I'm here to tell them this thing about Jesus. I'm more convinced than ever that in this generation, if you're willing to listen, people will be willing to listen to you. And they'll say, well, you know, what's this all about? Why are you doing this? Well, I'm with this group called Campus Ventures. Well, what are they about? Well, you know, we're Christians. Really, what do you do? Well, one of the things we do is talk to people about Christ. Really, like what do you mean? Well, let me explain it to you. You'll never get to that point where they're asking you unless you listen. And you'll see how that works in a second. Invite people to tell you more. And this is just a handy tip for all of your relationships, be they friendships, parents, marriage. Some of the most amazing words you could say in your whole life is, "Tell me more." So somebody has a problem and they're like, "Oh man, I'm really bugged by this." And you go, "Oh yeah, I remember one time I had something like that happen to me. Oh, it was a drag. Boy, I went on and on and I couldn't stand it. That reminds me of this other time where this other thing happened to me. It was just like it, you know." And the person says, "Okay, that's what I thought. You weren't really interested in what was going on in my life." And so they just stay on the surface with you. But if somebody starts to tell you something and they kind of open up a little bit, instead of hijacking the conversation to talk about how it happened to you and your solution, and you know, I do that all the time with my wife. "Oh, let me fix your problems for you." What I need to do is say, "Well, tell me more." And then they go deeper to what's really bothering them. And then you say, well, what else? And then they start talking about this whole other thing that's really underlying the whole thing. And now you're really getting to the heart of the issue. And you never would have gotten there if you weren't willing to put your agenda on the back burner and say, "Well, just tell me. What is it you want to talk about? Tell me more." That's a great skill to learn. Because you, with your friends, your family, someday with your spouses and with your kids, you'll get a chance to find out what's really going on, instead of just waiting long enough until you think of what you're going to say and then, you know, start into your story. And I do that all the time. I'm terrible at that. You see, if you're willing to listen first through your understanding of what somebody says, you'll actually figure out how the gospel applies to their life specifically. So if a girl you're talking to talks, you know, opens up to you, and I'm amazed how strangers will open up to other strangers constantly. So talking about how their dad mistreated them, well, then that gives you an idea that you need to dwell on the idea of God being a father. It may be hard for them to accept, but you might be able to say, you know, God is the father that you never had. And it may be hard to believe, but that's why, you know, knowing God is so important, because he fills in the gaps for all the human relationships that fail us. And, you know, if your relationship with your dad has failed, then But knowing Christ may be the first step towards getting to deal with that. Well, you're never going to know that unless you listen to that person long enough to find out some of the things that are going on in their life. So by listening, you can discern how the gospel relates to their life. After you listen, express understanding. Say, wow, that's terrible, or I understand. And then affirm what you can agree with. Do not attack what you can disagree with. Now, for the guys, this is a real challenge. Somebody's like, well, I think this about capital punishment, or what about the death, you know, what about this whole war situation, you know? And you're just immediately, that's your hot button issue. So you're going to just go to see, I'm going to convince you that capital punishment is this or that. Well, great. Then spend your time talking about that instead of talking about Christ. That's probably not the best thing to do. You see, it's the gospel that changes people's lives. And believe me, you could be talking to Jack Hall, and you'd probably be able to, if you talk long enough, find something you disagree with him about and have a big argument over it. If that's true for Jack Hall, how much more true of somebody who doesn't know Christ? So instead of trying to figure out how you can, you know, argue and attack their dumb positions on this, that, or the other, why not start with the gospel? So if somebody says something that you're like, oh man, gee, I don't know if I can agree with that. You don't have to agree with it. But if they say three things and you can agree with one, then say, wow, you know, I really agree with this. And try to find a point of connection. And then share the gospel. And then worry later about trying to, you know, pick over all the things you disagree with them about or the ways that they're sinful or wrong in their understanding. I used to think all evangelistic conversations were a battle. And if a person said anything that I disagreed with, if I didn't, you know, prove them wrong, I thought I was somehow letting down Jesus. And Jesus didn't do that. Jesus usually focused on the things that were most important, which is who he was and who his Father was. Okay. Page 2. What kind of time we have here? We're not going to get through all this. I just put it down on the paper.
We get people on campus by 7:30 or so.
Great. Great. Okay. This is the most important part. This is where I try to write out verbatim how I have these conversations. I walk up to people like Isaac and I say, hey, bro, can you help me out, son?
Yeah, what do you need?
Cool. My name's Ryan. Yeah, what's your name? Isaac. Cool. Good to meet you, bro. I'm part of a group, actually a student group here at Black Hills. It's called Campus Ventures. And it's totally cool. One of the things we do actually on a weekly basis is we go out and we initiate kind of informal surveys or conversations with students. One, to just kind of get an idea of what's on students' minds. Two, to kind of, you know, brush up on the art of conversation. You know, it's fun to talk to people. It's cool to, you know, just kind of see what's on people's minds but learn how to interact. And we usually always talk about really interesting topics. And so this week, we're you know, February is Black History Month. I don't know if you knew that. And it's kind of interesting, you know. And we just, you know, we're interested in talking about the issue of racism. And I was wondering just what you think about racism on this campus. And there's no right or wrong answer. But, like, do you think racism is a problem here at Black Hill State?
It's sort of a problem. I even see it myself sometimes. You know, we don't have mostly white people here and stuff, but mm-hmm. you got, like, the basketball players, and mm-hmm. a lot of them are Afro-American. You got the color people on campus and stuff.
Mm-hmm. The important thing about this is that it doesn't matter what he says. I mean, it does matter, of course. It does matter. I'm listening. But there is no right answer. It's what he thinks about racism. It's not about, at this point, what I think about racism. I want to know, you know, I really want to know. I mean, racism is a topic that's a big one at CU, and that's why I use that example. You know what the issues are on this campus. Maybe it's drinking. Maybe it's, you know, somebody who just got killed on the interstate. I heard that happened the other day. There's some fatalities. You know, this week we're talking about life and death because, you know, I'm sure you heard about, you know, the folks that were killed. And you know, what's one thing you hope to do before you die? You know, and do you think much about death? You know, I just made that up. I mean, that's the point, is that this idea of a guided conversation is you start with almost anything and you try to move to the gospel. But I always start out with, and I'm telling you, I do this every time and memorize this, can you help me out with something? Because people generally want to be helpful, and more importantly, perhaps, I'm giving him the right of refusal. So if he's busy, he's studying, he's tired, he needs some downtime, if he says, you know, I'm kind of busy right now, hey, great, no problem. And you know what? If I take offense to that, it's my fault. It's not offensive for somebody, you know, don't take offense if somebody says, look, I don't want to talk right now. It doesn't mean that they know you're a Christian and they're oppressing you and you're, you know, under persecution. That's not what it means. But that's how we feel, because we feel anxious about sharing the gospel. So we walk out and like, hey, dude, can I talk to you about something? And they're like, no, not right now. And you're thinking, oh, you know, they think I'm weird, or you know, they hate me because I'm a Christian. Well, that's not true. And I try to get it right out in front. Hey, can you help me out with something? Can I have a few minutes of your time? If they don't want to, then great. I want to know that up front, because I don't want to bug them. I want to invite them to have a conversation if they want to. So I start out with, can you help me out? And I say, my name is Ryan, and at CU, I do this little spiel here. I'm involved with a spiritual mentoring program here at CU called Fuel. And I won't spend too much time on this, but the reason we say that is because, you know, Christianity is not popular at CU. Crusades are very bad at CU. So we changed our name to Fuel, a ministry of campus crusade, because, you know, it's talking about the Crusades, and people are like, yeah, you Christians, burning people at the stake, great, you know. Okay, we want to get away from that a little bit. You know, that may not be a big deal here. CU is a big deal. And at CU, a Christian student organization, or even, you know, organization does evangelism and discipleship. You know, that doesn't mean anything to a CU student. But spiritual mentoring, that's real popular at CU. My palm pads going nuts over here, too.
Is Ryan supposed to be giving a speech right now?
No, we're supposed to go to campus right now. That's why we do that. I don't know that you have to do that here, but I just throw that in for you to kind of think about. The principle is, using the term spiritual mentoring is a term that CU students understand, and that's why I use it. Am I involved in spiritual mentoring? You bet. In fact, evangelism and discipleship in the scriptures is the very definition of spiritual mentoring. That's not what they mean by spiritual mentoring, but that's fine. We'll get to that. But what I'm trying to do is get to a conversation about Christ where I define the presuppositions. And I want them, at least initially, to think as positively about me as possible. And if they're going to think me strange, I want them to think that I'm strange because I believe that this guy lived and rose from the dead. He lived, died, and rose again. Then they can think I'm weird all they want. But if I use words they don't understand and jargon that sounds kind of religious and weird, then that can create a problem. So I just use the term spiritual mentoring to give them some vague idea of what we do, but use a term that's more positive than negative in their mind. And I say, you know, each week we go on campus, we do an informal survey, and we do this at CU. We just kind of go out and meet by the fountain once a week and have conversations like this with people. And I literally mean this. You know, this is a great opportunity to develop listening skills, learn the art of conversation. It helps us understand what's on students' minds. And you know why it's so hard to have conversations with strangers? Do you know why?
You don't have common ground.
Well, that's true. You don't know if you have common ground. What have you been taught since you were little kids about strangers?
Don't talk to strangers.
Huh. And what's funny is, when I asked you why is it so hard, none of you could answer me with that until I bring it up. But you all answered me once I brought it up. Every one of you have been taught not to talk to strangers, right? Now you understand why it's weird? Now who says that you shouldn't talk to strangers? Well, your parents all did. But is that some like impassable rule of world history that, you know, since the beginning of the dawn of man, you know, you're not supposed to talk to strangers? No. In fact, you know, one of the things that separated the nation of Israel from all other nations at the time in the ancient Near East was that Israel was told by their God to treat the stranger and the alien with kindness, justice, and fairness, instead of enslaving or murdering them, which is what every other nation would do to strangers. God's people have always been at the forefront of welcoming and treating fairly the stranger. Let's see, we live in a society that for fear of, you know, being molested or abducted by a stranger, we're not supposed to talk to strangers. Never mind the fact that it's statistically more likely that you would be abducted or molested by someone who you already know, a family member or an acquaintance. But we've all learned not to talk to strangers. That's part of the reason why it's so weird for you to talk to strangers. Now add to that the fact that TV and video games and the internet have killed the art of conversation, particularly for college students. And so people no longer interact the way human beings are supposed to interact on a regular basis on a college campus. I'm convinced it's one of the reasons why dating is almost non-existent. Because guys don't know how to talk to girls. They don't know how to talk to each other. They know how to play Xbox. You know, and I like playing Xbox, but you don't learn a lot about how to interact with other human beings by blowing aliens away, you know, on the video games. Well, then what happens? Then people isolate themselves from each other, and they wonder why they have this hole in their life, because they don't know God and they don't know others in the way that they were meant to. And you just got real problems. And so what you guys are doing by initiating conversations with people is you're in a sense being part of changing the whole culture for the better. Perhaps even changing the whole world. And you may think, well, that's kind of exaggerating. I don't think it is. Who's going to move towards strangers and meaningful interaction between human beings if not us? God has brought us into relationship with himself so that we could be in relationship with each other. Not just our little group here, but everybody on our campus. And we do that by initiating with strangers. So, think about this. Most students haven't had anybody listen to them this week the way you're going to listen to them tonight. Most students haven't talked about anything as interesting this week as you're going to talk to them tonight. And most students haven't had a conversation potentially this important probably in their whole life. So why are we ashamed? Why are we afraid? We're actually giving people a great gift of listening to them, that someday they may pay thousands of dollars to sit across a room from somebody and talk about their life because no one else will listen to them. And you all know what I'm talking about. You can give away the gift of listening and be a part of radically changing your world and ultimately the whole world. So now, in the 5 minutes remaining, let me give you some examples of guided conversations. And I won't even read through the whys of the guided conversation. Here's the examples. Okay, the one down to the second to the bottom. Can you help us out for a second? We do an informal survey for a spiritual mentoring group here at CU called Fuel. If you go out on campus and do an informal survey, and you could say, you know, tonight you could say, you know, we're trying something out this semester by having informal conversations with people about, you know, different topics to find out what's on students' minds and just, you know, kind of practice the art of conversation. This month we're talking about racism. Now, this is the racism example. Would you mind answering a question about racism? Here's the question. Do you think racism is a problem at CU? Well, here's how you get to the gospel from that. And I don't have it all written out here, but a part. So, what do you think causes racism? Do you think there's a solution to racism? And then have you ever heard the Christian perspective on racism? And what I do at that point, if somebody says, well, not really, I say, well, let me share this little booklet with you. It's just a four-point outline. There's no magic in it. But it explains what Christianity is, and it actually explains a lot about racism. And when I get to point two of the Four Spiritual Laws book, I talk about sin. I say, racism is just exhibit A of what sin is. Racism is everybody has to look like me and be in my family or they're you know, not worth anything. How self-centered is that? Well, that's what the Bible says that sin is. It's me first and everybody else, you know, forget you, including God. Primarily God and everybody else. That's what sin is. And Christianity not only says that racism is wrong, but all sin, and that's why we need someone to forgive us from our sins. That's an example of, you know, using racism to transition to the gospel. Next, Memorial Day. This one's a little bit long, but I'll actually jump. Do you celebrate Memorial Day? We did this on Summer Project. We just kind of brainstormed. What happened to Memorial Day? We did a staff sharing time. I'm like, what can we talk about? And I said, well, today's Memorial Day. Why don't we talk about Memorial Day? Great. So we went out. Do you celebrate Memorial Day? On Memorial Day was a good question. In fact, what's tomorrow? So maybe that's what we'll use tonight. But to give an example, do you celebrate Memorial Day? Yes, no, maybe so. Do you know anyone who has died in service to our country? How important to you is Memorial Day? And then here's sort of my transition to the gospel. I don't think I gave Memorial Day a second thought until I saw the movie Saving Private Ryan. The movie showed me that many men died in order to secure my freedom and safety. I think Memorial Day is also meaningful in light of September 11th, reminding me of the kind of world we live in and how unique America is. I also take Memorial Day seriously because I'm a Christian. That's interesting. What does this have to do with each other? Have you ever heard of the Christian Memorial Day? It's called Easter. It's a day where Christians remember that someone died to secure their freedom and safety. And that's the essence of what Christianity is. Is the living or the sacrifice, the giving of someone's life on behalf of others. And has anybody ever told you, you know, what that's all about in Christianity and kind of the story of the Christian world? Well, not really. Well, let me explain it to you in this four-point outline, this little booklet. Flip the page. September 11th. Where were you on September 11th, 1991? That's an easy conversation starter. Everybody knows where they were. Well, what did you think about it at the time? Have you thought differently since about it? About, you know, what do you think today about it? And then, do you think there's such a thing as evil? Do you think there's any punishment for evil? And how does that happen? Have you ever heard the Christian solution to the problem of evil? It's very similar. This conversation is very similar to the one about racism. So let me explain the Christian perspective on evil, and I'll do it in this four-point outline. God loves you and has a plan for your life, but why don't we experience that? Well, because of evil and sin. That's not just true of Osama bin Laden and everybody out there. It's true of me, too. I recognize that there's evil and sin in my own heart, and therefore I need Christ, who lived and died and rose again, and you share the gospel out of that conversation. Again, I'm going over these questions quickly, but tonight your goal is to initiate a conversation and ask these questions and just listen. And particularly at first, if you're worried about, oh, I got to get to the gospel, you might be like me and not listen. You might not ask somebody's name. You might do the, you know, the whole God by evangelism thing. So, right here, right now, let's think of the conversation that we're going to have tonight. How about Valentine's Day? That's a pretty good one, huh? And see what's so great about this? Let's just read this last paragraph before we do this. Part of the reason that the skill of guided conversation is so important is that you can use it anytime, anywhere, with potentially anyone. Next Memorial Day, you may be talking to your Uncle Leon about Memorial Day, and you might remember how to move from that to the gospel. And you just might share your faith for the first time with old Leon and see his life change forever. You never know when a guided conversation can start and lead to sharing the power of God and the salvation for anyone who believes. That's what's so great about this. If you learn this skill, you'll get in the habit of thinking, oh, how does this relate to the gospel? How can I move from talking about this to talking about Christ? And you know what the payoff in doing this is that probably for the rest of your life, once you graduate from college, this is how you will actually get opportunities to share your faith. They won't be planned opportunities. There'll be things that just come up, and you think, well, that kind of reminds me of the gospel. And you through asking questions and listening and then moving towards the gospel, you'll be able to share it. So how are we going to get from Memorial Day to the gospel? I mean, Valentine's Day from the gospel.
You love someone?
What's that?
You love someone?
Okay.
Does anybody love you?
Mm-hmm.
What is love?
What is love? That's a good question. What color is love? Wait a minute. that's called an open-ended question. What color is love? Talk about weird. you could say what is love? Who are the people you love most in your life? What most, when you think of love, what comes to your mind, or what's the greatest example of love that you know of? interesting. And another one might be that would be very relational, draw students out, would be who in your life regularly shows you love? Because then you get some idea of their relational connections. They say nobody, that's a problem. And you know, sympathize with them. That's terrible. that's messed up. Give them a hug. Just, you know, right there, you know. Here's an example of then how to transition to the gospel. And this might be a little abrupt, but use your best judgment. I could say, you know, honestly, I feel like I've learned the most about love from Jesus. And that, you know, that may sound kind of super spiritual or religious, but that's the honest truth. In fact, Jesus himself said that no one has greater love than that he laid down his life for his friends. And that's what the Bible says Jesus did for me. He laid his life down for me, even though I don't care near as much about God as he cares about me. And that's why I feel like I've learned a lot about love from Jesus. And you ask the question, has anybody, you know, has anybody ever told you about, you know, Jesus and his example of love? And the best way to put it is you ask, and this is one of the questions from the Quest survey, if somebody asks you what a Christian is or how to become a Christian, what would you say? And most people say, well, I think it has something to do with church. And so, well, that's right, but like, do you think you could explain, like, how to become a Christian? And people are like, no, I don't think so. And so, well, would you mind if I just told you briefly what that means? Sure. Well, the best way to do it is with this little booklet. And I pull it out and just carefully go through the gospel. Do you guys think you could do that? Maybe, I mean, again, let's not worry about the gospel at this point. But just theoretically, you might be able to do it. Now remember, now think about this. Your first words out of your mouth are, can you help me with something? Right? If you get that far, you're doing great. You're doing great. And don't be weird. Don't be weird. Because ultimately, at least initially, what you're asking to do is listen to someone. Can you help me out with something? You know, we're starting something new in CV. We're gonna have kind of informal conversations about things going on. And you know, tomorrow's Valentine's Day, so I was wondering. You know, by the way, my name is Ryan. Remember that part? What's your name? You know, and can you tell me what you think about Valentine's Day, and specifically love? Like, you know, what is love to you? And then listen, be attentive, ask, you know, follow up questions. And who in your life regularly shows you love? And you know, who do you feel like, or how do you feel like you've learned the most about love, or who do you feel like you've learned the most about love? And a lot of people are going to say their parents, I'm sure. And you can say, that's awesome. And I think there's like sort of an inverse proportion that to the longer you let them talk, the more receptive they'll be to the gospel. Within reason, I mean, you know, but I think that's true. And so don't feel the pressure to, oh man, I really got to get to the gospel. At this point tonight, particularly if you've never done this before, initiate a conversation and talk about love. And then for some of you, maybe who are a little bolder, see if you can begin to talk about spiritual things. And one way to do that without getting right to the gospel would be to say, do you think of love in spiritual terms? Like, what do you think the relationship is between love and God? And just, you know, leave it out there general like that. And then at some point you could say, well, the reason I bring that up is because I feel like I've learned the most about love from God, and specifically from Jesus, because he laid down his life for me. And you'll be amazed. I'm telling you, you'll be amazed. Not only that people will, I think, be interested and engaged by what you're doing, but at the end of the conversation, they will communicate to you both verbally and non-verbally that they've enjoyed this. I do this on campus all the time, and I do it with staff team at K-State. Took them out like this, and every single one of them came back and said, "Man, people thought this was really cool." In fact, they said, "Well, what's the name of your group?" "Well, it's Campus Ventures." "Well, when do you meet? What's this about?" Because you have significant, meaningful conversations about the most important things in life? Well, that sounds like it would be cool. And so, even if you don't get to the gospel, maybe finish by saying, you know, at Campus Ventures, this is what we're about, talking about the most important things of life and trying to figure out how that's related to having a relationship with God. We're a Christian organization, and we love talking about stuff that matters. So come check it out on, you know, whenever you guys meet, your weekly meeting. Any questions?